Welcome to episode 39 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we will talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Andy, Amy, Lindsay, and Sandy. Colorado is home to 25 world-class ski and snowboarding resorts, which have the longest season of any state in the United States, with resorts open from October through late April. The Arapahoe Basin is sometimes open all the way into June. On the other side of the world, when people visit the Alps in Europe, they also discover long seasons and beautiful scenery, as well as a vibrant ski scene. By now, you all know our own Andy worked in ski resorts in the Austrian Alps for a time and knows a thing or two about the ski experience in Europe. We also brought in a very special guest, Heather, who is a Colorado native and has been skiing since she was five. She's been a travel agent for 3 years with one of our friendly competitors, Compass Travel Experts, and has personally visited over 23 countries. Between the two of them, we want to talk about ski vacations around the world and how to choose the best location for your level and preferences. So let's get started. So Heather, can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, for somebody who really doesn't know Colorado, except they know they probably can ski there, can you give us sort of an overview of what Colorado has to offer and why it's a ski destination?
Colorado is a really awesome place. If you're from out east in the United States, something to know about Colorado is it is really big. I often have something we call East Coaster Syndrome around here, where you think that you can drive somewhere in just a few hours and it takes you half a day. So it's a really big state, and here in Colorado, from the time that we became a state to now, there have been over 150 different ski resorts. And today, we have about 25 of those that are still open. Some of them have merged together. And something that's really cool is that the first ski resorts that were founded here in Colorado were founded by members of the 10th Mountain Division after they returned home from World War II. So these were soldiers that were trained here in Colorado as skiers to go out and help in the Italian Alps during World War II. And so they came back, and some of the first resorts that they started were Vail Mountain and Aspen, and those are still open today. And that's right near where they were all trained, which is something that's really cool about our state.
That is cool. I didn't know that.
Is there still a base there? Do people still train there?
No. So the area where it's at is now a big, open, empty field, and it's kind of a old military ghost town. You can go camping there.
Oh, wow.
I love how you said, the ski resorts date back to the end of the Second World War. You know, the European ski resorts, obviously, they've been around for a whole lot longer. Skiing has been a way of life in Alpine countries and Nordic countries, as basically their only means of sort of getting around in winter. So I think some of the most iconic ski resorts, when you think skiing, you automatically think of countries like Switzerland and Austria and resorts like St. Moritz and Kitzbühel and Innsbruck and places that you can tie in with Winter Olympic venues. And that's often some of the appeal, not just the downhill skiing or learning to ski or the ski schools, but you can actually see a lot of things in Europe, experience sort of hundreds of years of culture, this alpine way of life where skiing, for a good portion of the year from probably sort of late October, early November until sort of well into April or May, has for many, many generations been the only means of getting around the mountains and sort of for many, many people. And it's just, so you've got that sort of European culture plus the skiing plus, access to, spectacular scenery. I know the Rocky Mountains are absolutely fantastic. I've sent some clients out there on a couple of occasions. I just think the whole sort of length of time that people have been skiing in Europe is just phenomenal, from hundreds of years and sort of competitive skiing sort of really sort of the 20th century. I think that's one of the major differences, just that the how long it's been going on.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Andy, we don't have like a couple hundred years. I mean, we have a couple hundred.
That's
years.
All we've got.
That's about all we've got. I don't think the Native Americans.
We did win the war. Amy, what did you say?
So when Heather brought up the East Coaster, so most of us at Outlander Travel live on the East Coast somewhere, and I grew up in the Midwest, so when I moved to the East Coast, like, we've got our Sugar Mountain and we've got our snowshoe, and people who are from the East Coast that go skiing and are used to skiing here, never been to Colorado. There's no ice machines that make the snow, quote unquote. You have powder. And I remember even skiing like on St. Patrick's Day in Vail. And I didn't even have to wear a coat that day. It was so sunny and beautiful. There's no way to compare the East Coast skiing. Well, now wait. Okay. So I take that back. East Coast, you've got Vermont, like Stowe, right. And some areas up north. But when you're, I'm thinking us as Outlander agents in South Carolina and North Carolina.
You've got Virginia.
Western part of the state.
West Virginia.
But those are sort of machine run mountains in a lot of cases. So Heather, can you talk about that? Like for somebody who's coming from sort of man-made snow and maybe a lack of snow in a short season, where should someone who is an East Coaster maybe start off in Colorado, especially since you said now you can't just drive around the state and try them all? Where should they aim for first?
So what's really great is that most of our big ski resorts are in a main area along what we call the I-70 corridor. So this is Summit County is probably where we have the majority of our ski resorts, and some of the best in the world. So in that area, you're going to have Breckenridge, Keystone, Arapahoe Basin, Silverton Mountain, which is only for experts, and also just up the hill is Copper Mountain. And those are some of my favorite places to ski. They're really accessible from the city. What a person in maybe the Carolinas might do during the summer, take a short drive out to the beach on a weekend day, we're going to take that short drive up to the mountains to go skiing in the wintertime. That's our beach. That's our powder.
So I have a question. So I am not a skier. I've tried it before, and it went horribly wrong. And so, but let's say I wanted to take my family, and I don't have any gear. Can I get the gear there? I mean, I know I can get the skis there, but we don't want to be skiing in jeans and, you know, things like that. It seems like it's very expensive to go do.
You can rent everything that you need. Skis, gloves, goggles, helmets, every single item that you need to be able to ski and ski safely as far as avoiding hypothermia and frostbite. And then also having the right gear for what type of skier you are. Because a beginner is going to use something that's different than someone who's an advanced expert skier. And all of our places where you can rent that, they're going to make sure that you get everything that you need in order to stay safe on the mountain.
And that's definitely the same in the European ski regions as well. The thing I love about it, the thing that I've remarked on or stuck with me for the longest time is just how family resorts are. I can't speak for Colorado, but you see like these wee little tykes coming, you know, they're barely able to walk, but they strap some skis on. And
they all whizzed by me on the mountain.
You can rent the equipment for the youngest skiers all the way up to if you don't own your own equipment. And I think that's pretty much fair of any ski resort that's worth it or ski area that's worth its salt. They're not going to let you go out there, although, to be honest, I've actually done it in some places in Europe just because I didn't have the funds as a student. But, if you really want to look the part and get the right equipment, then you can find it.
I didn't realize you could rent gloves. So that's kind of cool.
That's quite important, particularly at the higher elevations.
I mean, one of the things I did was showed up with my Isotoner gloves, and they got soaking wet. It was horrible. It was, on that icy man-made snow. It was, I did it twice, but I haven't gone in 3 years.
So I'm very curious about, we're going to talk more about skiing, actual skiing, but as someone who doesn't want to I believe Andy actually coined this phrase, throw herself down a perfectly good mountain. What is the après ski, where is the best place to do après ski and maybe even combine, if you have skiers in your group and non-skiers in your group?
And define après ski.
Après ski is French for after skiing.
Okay.
It's really quite simple. Although in my case, it's before skiing, during skiing, and after skiing. So Heather, can you talk a little bit about, Colorado's après ski experience and what you can experience off the slopes, I guess?
I would say that any day spent skiing is not worth going unless you're going to spend some time in the après scene. And there are some really great places. So probably the best places for après skiing are going to be Aspen, Vail Mountain, and Breckenridge. Those are probably my favorite places. They have deals for après skiing. It's basically happy hour.
We like happy hour. It's something
and
we do well.
The other thing is that one of the main things that we have to deal with here is there is basically one way into the mountains, and one way out of the mountains. And so après-skiing is about waiting out the traffic.
But you've also got, in Colorado, I mean, it's for those of us who like a good craft beer, it's one of the most notable places in the United States for craft brewing. And I'm sure that you are able to find some of, say, Fort Collins Brewing or Odell or New Belgium quite on a regular basis in a lot of these ski resorts. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. So my favorite ski town brewing company is Breckenridge Brewing. It has been around for a really long time. It's one of the reasons why I absolutely love Breckenridge. And of course, we have the highest number of breweries per capita of any state in the United States. You're going to find a new beer to love no matter where you go. They have something for everyone. And we also have had a really cool boom over the last few years, probably over the last decade, of distilleries. Breckenridge makes a really awesome bourbon, Colorado bourbon, which is awesome. And so some of the really neat things that you can check out nowadays.
I feel we might need a team building trip.
Yeah, I know. Why have I not been here?
The après-ski scene is a little bit different. It doesn't tend to sort of maybe revolve quite so much around beer. People tend to go into the ski resorts for probably a few days, at least a week at a time. And the après-ski scene really sort of tends to revolve around sort of the traditional local drinks that have been most sort of the herbal liqueurs, schnapps, as well as probably in some of the more glitzier places, you know, some of the higher end cocktails, as well as some of the wines. France and Germany, Italy are all known as wine producing regions, and so that's where it maybe tends to be a little bit different. It's definitely not classier because you know, you're imbibing alcoholic beverages. I think the après-ski scene there is just a little bit different.
I think this sounds like a perfect storm of people having a couple drinks and then deciding they're going to go down that Black Diamond one more time. Like, did they do something to stop people once you're drinking, or did people do that?
Wait, to stop them from
skiing? Going back out on the slopes.
Yeah, drinking and skiing.
Yeah, and you just go do it again? Wow.
I don't think so.
Is that an issue?
It would be for me.
That's why they have ski lifts, because if you're not,
you fall on your face when you're trying to get on.
They have a lot of chalets up in the Alps. You know, they're basically serving you drinks as you're going past. And the place is to stop and catch your breath and relax for a little bit and enjoy the spectacular mountain scenery. Have a little tipple and then continue on your way down the mountain.
Just break my neck.
I would anyway, sober. I can be stone sober. In fact, I might be better after a drink or two. So, but that actually is an interesting question, because for those of us who don't ski, in our correspondences, you had a note about a best place to ski at night. So I didn't even know that was a thing. Can you talk a little bit about that, Heather? What's the best place to ski?
The moon on the snow.
I'm sure it's beautiful, really bright, yeah. But again, throwing oneself down a mountain in the dark just seems like a bad idea.
It's not dark.
It's not in the
dark. They have lights like you would see at a football stadium lighting up the mountain. The big things to know about skiing at night, you definitely need to make sure you have the right equipment, because there's no sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cold.
It's very cold, yes.
So Keystone Mountain here is where you can go and ski at night, and they have their gondola service at night. They also have a really cool place at the top of the gondola that you can go up to, where they have three different restaurants up there, one that has like a polka band, one that is a 5-star restaurant that I once got in trouble because I accidentally made us reservations there instead of at the polka restaurant. On the spring break one. My dad was really mad.
I bet it was delicious though.
Great. You walk in and they take your coat and they give you a big plush comfy robe to keep warm.
Wow.
And they take your shoes and give you slippers, and that's what you're sitting there eating this 5-course amazing dinner.
Yeah, I was going to say, Amy, you and I are going. That is our scene.
Amy would be warm for us.
But they also do nighttime skiing in Europe. One of the most impressive things I ever saw, I spent New Year's, Christmas and New Year's in Kürsten, which is not too far from Salzburg, just over the foothills of the Alps. And one of the things they did on New Year's Eve was this: all the ski instructors sort of made their way to the top of the mountains. They kind of dimmed the lights a little bit, and they all brought down like flaming torches. And it's a really impressive sight to see these guys just coming down almost in formation with these torches coming down the mountain. It's really, really cool. But you can do a lot of nighttime skiing there as well. And, of course, they have some fantastic restaurants. And you can sample a lot of different cuisines in the European ski season, because you've got countries as diverse as France and Germany and Austria and Switzerland. But also you've got to consider other Alpine countries. Italy, not a bad place to go and dine. Or even you get a little bit further east from there. Slovenia might not be the first destination that people think of for skiing, but it's nestled in the foothills of the Alps, heading almost to, well, it's a former Yugoslav republic. But it's a very, very popular ski destination, and maybe a little less expensive than, say, your San Moritz or your Kitzbühel or your Cortina d'Ampezzo. So my mother, actually, she went skiing for the first time when I was in high school, and she went skiing in Scotland. You know, people think of spectacular highlands of Scotland, but there are ski resorts up there. The season's a little bit shorter.
I heard, this is because I'm going very soon, I heard that there's a place that you can actually ski in Scotland all year round. They have like special turf where you can just go skiing whether or not they have snow.
Yes. The dry slopes.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to fall down on that. It's very unforgiving. You're not always guaranteed. With Britain having a more temperate climate rather than typically long winter like Central Europe, you do have a lot of artificial ski runs. They're fun. You can't get quite the speed up, and they're not quite as steep. But if that's your only option, and for some of us growing up in Northern England, that really was our only option. But they're very unforgiving if you haven't fall over, which I tend to do on a regular basis in ski.
So when you, I put some clients that, gosh, there's a family of five, all different skill levels. Some didn't even want to ski. And I have to say, the lodges out in Colorado, I'm not sure everywhere out west, but beautiful. There are some beautiful lodges that have, like you said, the restaurants and the bars, but the spas, the outdoor fireplaces with the hot tubs. Like, this is kind of my scene. They just look beautiful. There's so much, even for people who don't ski, like you were talking about earlier, people who don't want to ski, you can wait at the base of the mountain for your crew.
Sit in the hot tub, yeah.
Heather, do you have some favorite resorts that you would point people toward that are just amazing?
So one of my personal favorites is the Westin at Snowmass. They have fantastic service, and it is a ski in, ski out hotel. And so ski in, ski out means that you can actually leave your hotel on skis, ski to the bottom of the mountain and spend your day skiing, and then actually come back to your hotel by the ski slope as well. I personally love ski in, ski out. It's the best way to pick an accommodation in a lot of these places. Also, if you are really looking for something that has a lot of, splits, Beaver Creek is an excellent location for some, higher end vacationers. It's a very luxurious place with an amazing spa, phenomenal restaurants, that are gonna be more on that high end.
That's Beaver Creek.
Just taking notes. So where would you fly into to go to Beaver Creek?
Which Beaver Creek you just fly in November. Mm-hmm. I personally, this is a personal opinion, I do not care very much for places where you have to fly in. So flying to Aspen or flying to Durango or Telluride is not one of my favorite things to do. Small planes are dangerous. Much of my fear level, don't like it. It's a 12-person plane, and in the mountains, flying is a very different sport. So I like places that I can drive to. Another really amazing place that I think you would love is Steamboat Springs. And Steamboat Springs is a great place, especially for having enough activities for the non-skiers as well as the those who are skiing. So it's a great all-around mountain, and they also have hot springs there, actual natural hot springs. You can rent a home there that has basically, they've kind of built around one of the spring spots to make a little natural pool outside of the house in the river. And yes, you can go in it in the wintertime. It's lovely.
That's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah. I just had clients go this past ski season to Seaboat, and they absolutely loved it. It was their second visit, and there was a party of 10. I think the youngest one was about 18 months old, all the way up to grandma. So, as you say, it's you don't necessarily have to be a skier to really appreciate the resorts and the area. You know, they didn't go skiing every day. I mean, you have to think some of the other activities you can do, snowmobiling. In Europe, well, one of the popular, it's not just downhill skiing. You think from watching the Winter Olympics, you've got cross country, the Nordic skiing. There's a lot of runs there. I've been skiing in resorts that were more noted for bobsled than anything else. And one of my favorite memories was actually going to visit the standing at the top of the ski jump. Admittedly, not in ski season, it was in spring, in Innsbruck, Austria, and just seeing just how crazy those guys are who. We talked about hurling ourselves up a couple of good mountains, hurling yourself down a really steep slope, seeing how far you can jump. And that thing, you just don't really get an appreciation for just what it's like until you're in a ski resort or into a sports place and stand at the top of the thing and just think, oh my goodness, these guys are nuts.
So Heather, one thing that was a challenge to me in planning client ski trips was these clients are flying into Denver to go skiing, say, in Aspen or Vail or wherever. And they're saying they want to rent a car in January, February, March. And these are people who are not used to driving and the conditions out there. And I remember seeing, and you might know more about this, there are some shuttle services that you can get from Denver all the way in. And they're not cheap, but it might be as much as renting a car. Like, aren't there services out there?
Yes, there are lots of services. So the main one is Colorado Mountain Express.
That's the one. Okay.
Yep. And so you can get from Denver to Frisco, which is at the bottom of Summit County, for $50.
Oh. Okay.
So actually really not too terrible. Yeah. And I think you can get to Vail for maybe $60 or $70.
Right. Okay.
And so they have those shuttles that go constantly from DIA up to, both the Summit County Resorts and Eagle County Resorts. And then you can also get them to Aspen. They're going to be a lot more. That's a bit further of a drive. But I mean, I've driven it in my two-wheel drive sedan.
So they clear the roads and stuff.
Well, yeah, there's also like the just being used to it that I think is
yeah. Issue.
So I have a really shallow question, being the après skier that I am, in the sense that that's what I want to be. we hear of these sort of places like Vail, and I'm going to spend my Christmas in Vail, and it sounds like such a hoity-toity place. Is that the place that I want to go to be able to come back home and say, you know, I saw Demi Moore while I was there, and I ate at the best restaurants. Is that really where you want to go?
You want to go to Park City, Utah, when Sundance is going on.
Okay, well, that's sort of a gimme, okay? Let's go to Cannes during the film festival. We might bump into a celebrity. But where are the places that where you might want to see and be seen and, you know, maybe run into a somebody of note?
So we have our own film festival in Telluride.
Yeah.
And that one is one of the favorites of your Hollywood elite. Also Aspen. We have a lot of movie stars that have homes in Aspen. So it's a very popular place for them to be. Since it's a little more tucked away, I think that's one of the big reasons why it's really popular. So that, you know, to get there from Denver, you have to drive I-70 quite a good ways past Aspen, and then you go down through Rifle Valley back into it. So it kind of adds an extra, like you drive around it.
You gotta work for it.
For 2 hours. that's, I think, why it's a little more hoity-toity, if you want to say, but that's where you're going to see the most famous people is in Aspen and Snowmass. and then in Telluride. Telluride, I think, is one of the best off-the-beaten track ski towns that we have here in Colorado. It's away from your I-70 corridor mountains, so you're not going to get as many Denverites up there for the day. They have a really great, awesome locals up in that area. It's probably one of the best lift systems in the entire state. Amazing terrain, really gorgeous views. The valley that it's in is incredible. And they also have something for every ski level there, for every skill level. So if you're a brand new beginner, it's a really great place to go and learn. But if you're looking for more challenging terrain, it's also a really great place to go.
I got one more thing to add. I see your movie stars in Colorado. I'm always used to royalty. European royals do go skiing in sort of Val d'Isère, Chamonix, Zermatt. I'm not guaranteed that you're going to spot anybody, but you might not see Robert Redford either anywhere else. So.
Are those the same? Is that the sort of the same deal where those are a little bit harder to get to, Andy, or are those just?
Yes.
Okay.
They are. They tend to be a little bit further up mountain, tucked away, harder to get to. With good reason, that's why it's popular with the royals and sort of the more well-to-do crowd.
Because they have people to get them there.
Pointy-toity.
It's a technical term.
Yeah.
Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or just search for Fly Away. Or if you don't like any of those choices, email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you. And if you want to get in contact with Heather, you can reach us any of those ways as well, and we will put you in contact. On behalf of Andy, Lindsay, Amy, Sandy, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.